So thanks to Mark and Wolfram for the invitation. The work I will present now is made in collaboration with a student of Universidad de Concepción, and he also works in SEX, Centro de Estudios Científicos, is Diego Hidalgo. So most of the things I will say now are written in this manuscript that you can find in the archives, recently put online. So the main goal of this talk is charges in the case of gauge theories. And three sub-goals are to compare two explicitly covariant methods to compute charges. Then we will apply these two methods to the case of gravity coupled to electromagnetism in the Einstein-Cartan formalism. And then we will check just some examples. So this is the content of the talk. So these are mostly the titles of the slides, so there are not so many slides, I think. And the disclaimer is that, okay, most of the things that I will talk about are already kind of known, but this is like a re-understanding of some stuff. Mostly what I would say that is a new thing is like the understanding this in the language of Einstein-Cartan formalism. So why I care personally in this thing is because, okay, many, this is a little story. It's because in the 2011, we were interested in defining a quasi-local energy for black holes. And we did that by using a family of accelerated observers. So then we realized that actually what we thought was actually a quasi-local energy for black hole was rather extremely based on the observers. So after that, we also were doing some quantum models for black holes in the context of loop quantum gravity, mainly based on a Chern-Simons symplectic structure that was associated with the horizon. In this case, we were using a symplectic approach. So we made many things in this subject. And then after that, I had a question if that was possible to extend this symplectic approach in an action principle. At the time, it was not clear. And then it happens that the Chern-Simons is something that could be adapted somehow just in the case of the symplectic structure, but you cannot really have a Chern-Simons action in the boundary such that the gravity is coupled naturally with the connection. Chern-Simons connection. So I was studying that, and then I realized that actually Chern-Simons term appears quite naturally in the action, but in a very different spacetimes, which are the spacetimes which have asymptotically the sitter or anti-de sitter structure. In those cases, you really solve many problems if you put a Chern-Simons term in the boundary. Because the action itself is finite, and the charges are also finite. So then I get interested in charges. But still, this work made by these people there solved how to define like netter charges in this asymptotically de-sitter, anti-de-sitter space. But the same structure can be also used to de-sitter spacetimes. In that case, so you can do the same calculations. However, I was wondering why that happens, that you need to really use some structure at a synthetic future, which is what happens in the sitter, to define a mass of something that should be more easy to define. So, okay, so why don't try again to do something quasi-local? And then I get involved in this surface charge story. By the advice of Marco and Sergio, who were collaborators at the time in SEX. And then in the meantime, there was this new interesting ideas proposed by Strominger, Hawking, and Perry, where they were claiming that maybe what they call asymptotic charges, maybe may be useful to solve the information paradox. So there was something very relevant that you could define asymptotically, but maybe it could be very useful. So I got interested in that, and then I said, okay, maybe it's better if we really study deeply which are the surface charges in order to decide if this could be a true proposal for the true proposal to get a physical meaning of these asymptotic charges. So that's the short story of why I get interested in that. In particular, if you see the last year lectures by Strominger, at some point he studied what happens to a black hole if you just super translate it. Okay? So you can really perform a super translation of the Schwarzschild black hole. And then they would say, okay, so this black hole is different somehow. It has a charge. It has an asymptotic charge. So the question for me was, still is, what makes this transformation here, which is just a little derivative from this particular field, physical? Okay, where is the physical content of this new supertranslated black hole? So starting from the very beginning, we know that a charge is a charge because it's something that you can compute in one time, and then it's also conserved. So the main feature of a charge is that it is conserved. If you will call something charge, it's better that is conserved. So what is interesting is that you have a conservation law. This is a picture that a friend sent me to me while I was preparing this talk. And actually, we are like in this level yet. So then Nether tells us what is a Nether charge, which is basically you can compute by using the Lagrangian formalism. If you associate a transformation, this is a short review to get to surface charges. So you just compute the boundary term associated to a charge on the Lagrangian and say that this is equal to the boundary term computed on shell on the Lagrangian, the two quantities here. And then you realize that on shell, you have a current, and you may define a charge with this current. This is just a way of introducing maybe a little bit of notation. I will call this the boundary term associated to the symmetry. This is the boundary term associated to the variation in the equation of motion. This is just, if you're not familiar with this notation, this is a standard story. So what happens when you have a gauge symmetry? What is wrong when you have a gauge symmetry? Well, the fact is that when you have gauge symmetry, you have also Nether identities. And what Nether identities tells you is that this quantity here that you compute when you have a variation of the Lagrangian, which are the equations of motion plus the gauge variation, are actually an exact form or a total derivative. What we call, what I call here DSE. So this tells you that actually, if you put all these terms in one side, you could define a current, which is trivially conserved. Okay? It's trivially conserved because I'm not even using the equation of motion to define this charge, this current. Okay? So because of that, when you have a gauge symmetry, you cannot really distinguish between which is a true current or just this trivially conserved current, because actually both are the same on shell. This term is just equation of motion. So you have to say something else. You have to have a better formalism to treat the problem. And here's the subtle point. If you really think that you are dealing with charges here, that this is a meaningful thing, you may go on and compute like a charge out of this quantity here. But then what you get is something strange. You have infinitely many charges conserved everywhere. And this is complicated. So these are what people call gauge charges, which should be somehow meaningless. And still, one way to deal with this problem, with this infinitely many charge, is to impose more information on them. So one usual strategy is to say more things about the symmetry, or also about the boundary terms that appear in the Lagrangian. That is, in fact, what the Chern-Simons useful for. You could put the Chern-Simons to make those charges finite. But there is still another strategy who does not rely on the Lagrangian or on the boundary terms, which is by going through the phase space. In the case of the phase space, you may study the two form, the symplectic structure density, and realize that for any gauge orbit on the symplectic density is just an exact form. And then if you strengthen the symmetry and make it exact, you see that this presymplectic structure density show you a conservation law. But it's a different conservation law. It's not the Netter current. It's a lower level. So out of this conservation law, you may also now define new charges, which are these ones. But these charges are one forms in the phase space. So it's a variation. I use this symbol, which was introduced by Barnich on comparison, which tells you that actually we really don't know if this quantity here exists. We know that it's a one form, but we don't know if this one form is a variation of something else. This is called the integrability of the charge. It's another problem. So, okay, these are the surface charge, and then these are conserved, so you can compute if this is an exact symmetry in all this region, then you could associate something computed here with another surface here. It's important that it's a closed surface.
This charge is a conserved only on charge, right?
Sorry?
Defining this charge, you use the equation of the motion.
Right.
So you don't have the problem with
another charge. Exact. So the next slide. So there are two ways to compute this charge. And the two methods requires the equation of motion. Necessarily, otherwise it's not conserved, right? So there are two methods. One is the standard one. Both now are standard. The one developed by Wall and Sopas, which starts from the Lagrangian and start with this current that I showed you before, and then making some calculations, you can make the symplectic structure density appears in this calculation. And then you realize that when you have a gauge symmetry on shell and the linearized equations are satisfied, then you have this quantity here. Still for a gauge symmetry, but then you have to apply exact symmetry. So there is an alternative way to compute the same, not the same quantity, but almost the same quantity, which satisfies the same properties, which is developed by Barnich and Brandt. And the idea is to use what is called an homotopy operator, a contracting homotopy operator, who satisfies the following property. So if you apply this property in this quantity here, remembering this equation here, you realize that this k here prime is conserved under the same assumptions that this one here is conserved. So the three assumptions that I will... So these three assumptions that this is on shell, the linearized equations of motion are satisfied, and you have an exact symmetry. Okay. So I'm just insisting a lot in this is that I like the conditions for this to be a really a charge. So both methods actually are equivalent. The conservations hold for the same conditions, and actually the charge that you can compute out of them are the same. You just need to be sure that these conditions are satisfied. If this condition is not satisfied, you're not dealing with an exact symmetry. Well, these are not really conserved, and these are not equal quantities. Okay, so whatever you're doing, maybe relaxing some conditions, you have to be aware that this is not anymore equal. So, in what sense these are quasi-local charges? Well, in the sense that you have just to integrate in a too close surface. Well, it's n minus 2, this is any dimension. everywhere. We could do it like, in principle everywhere. Then, what about integrability? As I said, the integrability is another problem. You have to, once you have computed the charge, you still don't know if this quantity exists. So you have to really solve this equation here. And sometimes, I mean, in general, it can be solved. For instance, you can always multiply a surface charge for an arbitrary function of the phase space. And you also will get this condition here, which is like a distributivity on the symmetry parameters. That may allow you to solve this equation. Okay? Let's imagine that it's not solved, then you can put another symmetry parameter, and maybe this charge here will solve this equation. It happens in some examples. So just a very trivial example. If you want to compute the surface charge for electromagnetism, you just better compute this exact symmetry condition, and then the surface charge is just this quantity here. And you compute this. So the interesting thing is that in electromagnetism, this condition can be solved always. You don't need really to know the equation of motion. You don't really to know the field. So it's globally solved. And then you compute the surface charge. And the other good thing is that if you choose this parameter to be constant on the phase space, you can trivially integrate the charge. And then you get the usual thing. A more interesting example is what we were interested in. This is the Einstein-Cartan-Maxwell theory plus an Euler term, which is hidden through this R bar here. So R bar here is this combination. So this will give you just the Einstein theory plus the cosmological constant, but this gives you also an Euler term, which is what I told you, that it's a Chern-Simon term in the boundary. It's a topological term. Okay, we will realize that this actually not, it's not important. That you are dealing with the topological term. It's not really important because it goes away the Zeffer charge equation. So in this example, you will need to compute to solve this condition, which is the exact symmetry condition, where here I am using the improved transformation, which is like the Lie derivative plus gauge symmetry such that these things are homogeneous under Lorentz transformation. So you solve this equation, and for these parameters, which are the symmetry parameters, C and lambda, if you're able to solve them, then you have a surface charge that you can define using, for instance, this formula. This is for Einstein plus Maxwell. So this is the Maxwell part, which you may know that we also have a contribution from the diffeomorphism. OK?
And just a question on the Lagrangian. There's also just the usual Einstein-Lieber term in the action, or is it?
Usual what?
No, the action of this theory, is it what you have given here, or was a term that just the usual Einstein-Hilbert.
So the Einstein-Hilbert term is the contraction of the field lines with R, right?
Right.
And it's hidden here. It appears twice.
Yes.
Yeah? So this is the standard plus something else. So if you open this, you will get R term plus 2. Plus, well, here's the lambda. Right? So this is the Hilbert term. So it's just a standard theory plus a nice boundary term. So there is a respectable example that you can deal with, but I will not go into the details because I don't have enough time. So it's the Sitter-Kerr-Newman family, where you have a asymptotically constant curvature could be either the sitter or anti-the sitter, which is electrically charged and also rotating. And you make the computations, you have a symmetry and also time translation symmetry, and you can compute the charge, and all those charges that you will compute satisfies the first law of black hole mechanics, like as a test. Okay. So once you are happy with this, you may wonder if maybe there is another way to use the Barnich approach, which uses this homotopy operator. So I mostly start following the Wald approach, like starting from the Lagrangian. But I also want to compare this with the Barnich approach. So I have to compute this homotopy operator. In order to do that, you should go through this formula, which in the case of Einstein-Cartan theory reduces to this nicer formula where you have explicitly gauge invariance, and also the symmetries, sorry, the coordinates are not explicitly written. So in this case, without the electromagnetism, you compute the surface charge potential, and you get just this part. So if you realize there is not the RR term is not contributing, as in the case of the Wald approach. So the difference between the both surface charge potential is what you find here. And the nice thing is that you can recast this term, this difference, as an exact form plus a term that will vanish in the case of the exact symmetries. So as I told you before, if the exact symmetries are satisfied, these two things are exactly equal. So we conclude that the boundary term does not contribute, and that the cosmological constant also doesn't contribute. This is because you are deriving respect to the curvatures. So this is the curvature, and this is the torsion. Then you can ask, OK, maybe this Euler term does not contribute. But what happened with the Ohls term, or what happened with the Nijian? All these terms that you can add in the Lagrangian? Well, we also have explicit proof that any of them contribute. Some of them happens, for some of them, the same happens. For some of them, they vanish because of the equation of motion. But even if you are using the Wald term, the Wald approach, we use explicitly the Lagrangian, and you may be worried that the boundary terms could split into your charge, if the assumptions are satisfied, any of them will really give a meaningful contribution. Okay. So now that you're happy with this, expression here, then you can really extend the calculations, just because they are really easy, to any dimension. You have just to compute derivatives respect to the torsion or derivatives respect to the curvature. So in any dimension, you have the Einstein theory can be generalized at what is called the Lovelock-Cartan theory, where you put all the curvature terms in the action and complete the degree of the form by using the field lines and contact all of them with the Levi-Civita term, the pseudo-tensor. So you can write this general Lagrangian, and then using this Wald procedure, then you just compute the surface charge potential, which is an expression. And the interesting thing is that each of these terms can be decomposed exactly as the term that I just showed you for the Euler term. So there is a lot of redundancy here. That's what this equation tells you. All of this would not contribute to the surface charge. So you have an equivalent surface charge potential that you can just write like this. OK, this you don't have to follow, but you just take these terms away, you get this expression here. And it happens what you expect, that this is actually the surface charge potential you would have compute using the homotopy operator. Right? So this is a cross-check you can do. If you use this for gravity in the dimensions, but not just with all the terms, but just keeping track of the first term, which is the Einstein-Hilbert one. Then you recover the what Barnich, Mao, and Ruzziconi show at the end of last year in the Einstein-Cartan format. So we were discussing with Alfredo 2 days ago, and another example that we can do with these general formulas is just to recover the Walt entropy for Lovelock gravity. So you just take this formula and evaluate them on a very particular surface, which is the what is called the bifurcated horizon, right? This particular surface, so it's an horizon, a Killing horizon that then you have this equation. But the nice things about the bifurcated horizon is that the Killing generator of the horizon vanish itself. So you have this equation here, which makes that the formula here simplifies a lot. This term vanishes, and then you have to worry just about one term. So the nice thing about this is that you can actually integrate the charge. I was all the time talking about surface charge, which are one forms in the phase space. So you can really integrate and get a finite quantity. Okay, and this finite quantity is a proposal for the entropy, which was already found by Jacobson and Myers, Bagnaos, Tete, Ronzanelli in the 93, in the metric formalism. So this is kind of different.
So in integrating this charge, is it necessary to set the variation of the sign, the Killing vector, to zero?
Yes. Yes.
So one, it is as if
you're choosing a Killing vector on a family of on your phase space. And you want it to keep it.
Does this mean that one considers like a subspace in the phase space?
Right.
Where you only explore directions that preserve this condition.
Right. Yes. What is not preserved is, for instance, the surface gravity. This moves on the phase space. And also, this quantity here moves on the phase space. Okay, so, but this is this is why this is tricky about this. I need this equation because otherwise I don't have this conservation on the phase space. It's a detail, but this is what allows me to take the variation that I had here. Okay. Okay, so another example that you can. So, how much time do I have?
Another 20 minutes.
20 minutes? Another example that you can explore is the 2 plus 1 black hole with rotation and electric charge. This is also a respectable solution that you can try to compute charge out. And there were some problems with this solution because actually it has a logarithmic behavior at infinity. It has like a tailing, which is kind of unpleasant. That makes some problems because the standard approach is like using the Brown-Henault boundary conditions. And those boundary conditions do not allow logarithmic corrections. So those boundary conditions. So if you assume those boundary conditions and then have some formulas for the charge, and you apply them for this black hole, they explode. You get infinity. So we use this surface charge to compute this thing in the metric formalism, but just because we know that all of them are equivalent. And we also choose the wall approach. And then you compute this general formula for the charges. And then you have to solve the symmetry, exact symmetry condition, which is solved with these parameters here. Now that then the logarithm appears in the parameters, but they naturally appear. You need them to solve the exact symmetry condition. And then, okay, you can compute the surface charge. And this is something that was already found by these people here. Were like happy with that, unless so this charge satisfies the first law of the black hole, the first law of black hole mechanics. But it has still some problems because you could not rescale them. So this, if you rescale, they have a bad rescaling in this charge. This problem was solved in this paper here by considering still some freedom. So this surface charge still has some freedoms. And by exploding these freedoms, you can redefine them such that the rescaling is right. Sorry, so the other problem that they have is that this mass here is not positive. It's unbounded from below. So you can have an infinitely negative mass, which is also a problem. So by using the argument that by these people here, you can really solve this problem, recast the mass in the right form, and you get a positive spectrum. So, okay, so once you are happy computing charge, then you can apply this formalism for many other systems. And here are just some examples you could be interested in, like Trans-Simon theory or Lamils. Also, we are especially interested in Einstein-Skirme model, where you also can have black holes. Okay, so more interesting question maybe are like extensions to quantum regimes. What happens for surface charge when you have a quantum regime? And we are also trying to define mass for black holes which are quantumly corrected, like Dressed black holes. So these are other explorations. Just to finish, what had we learned with this? So charge can be computed either asymptotically or quasi-locally. That's like something that we wanted to, and it's for sure true. The only thing that you need is some information about your solution. So usually what people do is like they find some tailings at infinity. If the information that you have is just at infinity, okay, you just compute the charge there. But you can also have information around the horizon or near the singularity or in an intermediate region or in other solution, not necessarily black holes. In those cases, you can also compute the surface charges. So both methods, those covariant methods, are actually equivalent only if these equations, or sorry, these conditions are satisfied. Just like a warning, this is always something. You can always put your fields there and your parameters there, and you will get something. But maybe it's not meaningful. You really need to be worried about the assumptions. If these assumptions are not satisfied, you have to be worried because maybe some gauge is inside what you say that is a charge. So yeah, the interesting question is if these asymptotic charges could be actually be understood in the bulk. There is Serac and collaborators have some work on that in the case of 2+1. But still, I think the question is open. For sure, on the example I gave you in the beginning, this super translation, the super-translated black hole, charted black hole, does not satisfy the exactness condition. So any of this can really be a conservation. So I don't know, the little hope is that this conservation, I mean, if you will talk about charge, you better have a conservation. So how do you generalize this conservation? Maybe there is a way to generalize it on the phase space, which is right now that I don't know a way, but I think this is like stretching the question to the right focus. And that would be nice because in that case, you will maybe have this infinitely many charges that usually are defined at infinity, like in a bulk. And you will really say something physical about the space-time. Okay, that's all. That's some prospects. Understand better the VRC origin of surface charts, and also say something about these quantum regimes when you have this perturbation of the spacetime. So I will finish here. Thank you.
How this relates back to the information paradox, how the equivalent formalisms would maybe give it additional insight.
So you want me to speculate about
yeah.
how they just start
yeah.
can solve? Well, this is what this is the story. This is the proposal of Hawking, Perry, and so the speculation is up to them for them. So what I say is that all these kind of degrees of freedom that you can define in the asymptotic region can also be defined, for instance, in the horizon, and probably everywhere. So what the claim somehow is that there is a lot of charge, so a lot of physical quantities that we were missing. Okay, and those physical quantities, which are kind of nice because they commute with the energy of the system, so it kind of allows you to have a lot of degree of freedom with the same energy. Those quantities will allow you to put some degrees of extra degrees of freedom on the horizon for black holes. This is kind of my understanding. That would be very interesting because if you have this degrees of freedom, maybe the entropy of the black hole could be related to that. So yeah, that's the answer. But it's not my it's them, their story. No questions?
Can you say a little bit more, if you didn't already, about you said quantum corrected?
Yeah, no, this is just a work in progress. I have not much to say now. So just we are dealing with a very particular example here. So we are dealing with this equation, for instance, in the case of a 2+1. A quantumly corrected black hole with a scalar field, which is quantum. And then you get a correction of the mass because of that. So we are dealing with the very particular question of how to use this surface charge to define the mass of this quantum corrected black hole. Okay.
So by quantum correction, you mean this is sort of semi-classical treatments?
Yes.
Of gravity?
So you have this solution, and then you put on top of that equal to zero. On top of that, you put a quantum scalar field.
Yes.
Right, and then you compute
the gravity remains classical. Is that right?
The gravity remains classical. No, because then you solve this equation for the SARS that you put. So you have a quantum correction on the metric here. It's like the first step.
But it's a quantum correction from the matter field. I understand.
Yeah, I mean, yes, the gravity, yes, you're right, the gravity remains classical, just has a source that is quantum. So we are, this is already out of the assumption of the framework of surface charge, so
right.
How would adapt this to this?
It's
still unclear. I mean, we have to relax some of the conditions, like the equations of motions are not satisfied anymore. So you have to have the equations of motion plus h bar correction. But it's not real clear yet how to. We have some computation, but so the good things about surface charges, they are conserved, so they don't depend on the radius, for instance. Where we have still depends on the radius, so we're not really sure if it is right.
I think in 2D there is a actually write this effective
team universal
action. And then
the
global formalism applies.
Yeah, no, that's the point. No, it doesn't. In the solution I'm working on, this there is not actually an action principle for this.
Maybe in 3D there is not, but in
2D there is. In 2D,
sorry.
Yeah. Maybe in that case you have.
You can write an action which is GR plus some the effective action which gives you this effective team union. And then the whole formalism applies.
In that case it should be fine. Here it looks like there will be an action, but actually there is not, if you are very strict, then the parameters that are inside but not coincide with the other ones.
Say that again, what's the topic? You said there cannot be an action?
No, I don't know, I don't have an action. I don't know the action to reproduce this quantum modified equation of motion. I'm not saying that there is not.
But I guess it would depend on the state of the matter field, the scalar field, or whatever. But is that what happens at 2D?
Yes. Yes, it depends on some free function, which is basically the specific in the state. Or the boundary conditions form, because the Lagrangian is one over box.
If you use the Lagrange method, then you don't need the action.
Yeah, but you don't need the action, but it's tricky. Still, there are some problems. Yes, I thought that that was the solution, but then I applied this directly, and then still there, you don't have the conservation of the charge. You have a dependence on the radius, which is wrong. So you can apply this Banach method for this, which is just a VTZ, and it works. And you can apply this for this with a SARS that is a conformal couple scalar field, which also works. But then the parameters in the solution are completely fixed. The mass of the VTZ with the couple scalar field is completely fixed. You don't have another degrees of freedom. But then if you are using this equation, which is quantum reacted, then you have 2 degrees of freedom, 2 parameters, the mass and the h-bar quantity, which is a Planck correction. And this solution doesn't come from an action principle, as far as I understand. That's why it's kind of technical, but I can't.
So if you look at the first law of black hole mechanics, do you expect that these charges show up in the first law, that they contribute to the...
They do, sure. They are the charges of the first. I mean, the first law in this language is just this equation. It's just this. So what you do here is you split. You say, okay, maybe if you have a bifurcated horizon, you evaluate this side in the bifurcated horizon. But then this one you want to split on other charges. You can split this parameter. For instance, I don't know if this is like dt plus omega d phi. Then you split this parameter and you get the other charges. Right, you have explicitly the first law. So the first law in this language is really condensated at this level. You don't need really to.
But is this a quasi-local notion of the first law or the?
Yes, it's quasi-local. It's completely quasi-local.
But I'm asking for the global first law that relates the charges at infinity to the variation of the area of the horizon.
Right. So those ones are. Okay. So this, when I say this equation, I'm not telling you which is the place I am computing, because I am assuming that it does not depend on the place. Right, so if I want to compute this at infinity, I can also do it, and it will be a global. I could compute one of these charts at infinity, and it's somehow global. But you're not grasping the thing in the sense that actually it doesn't depend on the place you compute it. This is what is interesting. You can compute it close to the singularity. It's a matter.
Just to follow up on this question, when you can say the first law, so you're talking about variations of the quantum mass,
yes,
and the charges and so on. So are you is this exposition, does it restrict yourself to variations which take a stationary solution to a stationary solution? Or is it more general?
No.
So that you can take, that the variation can destroy the stationarity.
No, no, this is more restricted. You are
the second one.
Yes.
I am just talking about the movements on the phase space who were from one stationary solution to another stationary solution.
No, it's from one stationary solution to another stationary solution.
Yes.
But there's a form of the first law which works if you do it at infinity. I'm not sure about the quasi-local form. That's what the question is about, sort of. But if you do it at infinity, then the variation, the first law still works even if you move to a non-stationary solution.
Okay, so what can I say? What can I say
in the quasi-local framework?
How I would apply these frameworks in this case is exactly the same. You just are telling me, okay, the information that I have about my space-time is just at infinity. So I can just move all these charges and compute where I have the information. This is at infinity. Are there exact symmetries there? Probably yes, because you're talking about charges. So in that sense, yes, you can put this just at infinity asymptotically, and then you will
put this at infinity. But before you started moving it around, I thought you said that you're moving on the phase space from one stationary solution to another stationary solution. Did I misunderstand?
Yeah, right. The examples I work on are really stationary, but the framework is more general in the sense that you don't really go to infinity, and you don't know really what's happening inside, and you may define a charge there also.
Yeah,
but then I don't know if you have a first law because you need the notion of horizon and a black hole, which is not.
This is from Aaron Walden. Their first law is derived from this approach, and it's more general. It's not only for the stationary solutions. Yes, that's right. But I'm asking if this, in this quasi-local framework, if that fact remains. I'm not sure what you mean with quasi-local, but entropy is defined at. I mean, he means putting. He wants to do this integral anywhere.
Right.
So I'm guessing that only if you do it at infinity does it work when you consider non-stationary variations.
No, because entropy is defined at the right. I mean, the only restriction is, as the whole thing says, is that you allow for some variations that keep some properties of this thing, right? But you are not restricted to only those variations that take you from one stationary solution to another station.
Well, I agree with that if you compute the charges at infinity. But I'm not sure if you compute them in this some intermediate place, whether that remains true.
So the setup you're proposing is that not putting anything in the intermediate place, just saying that you have something well defined at infinity.
Well, I'm not proposing anything, I'm just asking a question about what the result is of this formalism.
Yeah, in this formal, if as far as you have exact symmetries at infinity, you will get.
I'm not even asking about infinity. Let's say you just do it quasi-locally. Maybe I just haven't understood something about what you're doing. But I thought you said you could compute these charges anywhere. You could put that surface anywhere.
Yes.
Did you say that?
Yeah, yeah. As far as you have a symmetry, you are happy, and then you can compute the surface.
But in the variant solution, you don't have the symmetry anymore. That's what I'm wondering.
But what you need is a kinematic vector for the background solution.
That's what I'm asking. That's what you're saying, but he's not saying that. I'm asking him whether that's true for the, if you put the surface on which you evaluate the charges in an arbitrary location.
I think we are not understanding each other. The thing is just that, I mean, we can also compute these things in an intermediate location. The only thing that you need is a well-defined notion of a Keeling field there. If that is true, then you will have this surface charge. The physical interpretation of this surface charge as a part of a first law of black hole mechanics is something else. you need a black hole.
Restrictive.
In every way, sir.
Because the symplectic form is linear in the, is a bilinear in perturbations. And if you have a Killing field for the background only, then one of the arguments is zero, and therefore the Killing form is zero. So you can extend the charges into the ball. And this is why it works.
That would work if it was not stationary.
Yeah.
So over here. Maybe we can should discuss it later.
Yeah, maybe we can discuss later this. So,
because in that case, I think these causal local charges do not contribute to the force. In this extended version, where you evaluate the variation on a space time that admits a Killing vector, then it just relates variations at infinity to the variation of the area, the horizon, but at infinity you only the variations of mass and angular momentum.
Yes.
But maybe
I'm it's an interpretation you can give. I mean, you can always, I'm just repeating myself, but you're saying that maybe at infinity, and then you have the black hole, and you can relate things here with here through this surface charge. Yes, this also you can do it. But this is giving information at infinity and giving information on the horizon. Right, that you can do. And maybe you don't know what's happening in the middle.
So, I guess I could ask the question without the black hole. It really has nothing to do with the black hole. You still have you still have a version of the first law. It becomes more trivial, but you still have it. And there's no black hole. Any stationary solution.
Right. Yes, I mean, if you have an asymptotic region where you have well-defined time symmetry, then you're happy. You can also have an approximately defined Killing time symmetry, and then you're also happy. Does it answer your question?
No, but right, no more questions? Let's thank Ernesto again.